So in shifting gears, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the agricultural issues that we, and non-point source issues that we face in the state, in particular some of the nitrate contamination issues. And the first speaker who's going to begin to address that issue is Michael Russell, who works with the Agricultural Research Service here on campus, the St. Paul campus. So he also had a short commute. Title of his presentation today is Leaves It Cleaner Than They Found It, Perennial Forages and Water Quality.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate being here. I'm interested in water too, surface and groundwater. I'm a soil scientist with the Agriculture Research Service, and my job's 100% research. I happen to be located on campus here, which is absolutely fantastic. And I see my job as keeping nitrogen cycling on the farm. Whether a farmer buys it or has to move it from the barn or uses legumes to fix it, the idea is to use that nitrogen to produce an economic product. And of course, we all want it to stay on the farm as opposed to going off as ammonia, getting into water as nitrate, coming out as nitrous oxide or NO. So we work a little bit with all those aspects of inputs, fluxes, and the fate. Let me make sure I've got the right pointer. This is nitrate, and you all know what it's like. It's negative, got a partial negative charge on the outside, and it's really slippery. It goes through the soil like nobody's business because clays have a negative charge, too, from cation substitution. And so it moves through the soil in mass flow and also diffusive flow. And we can actually manage that to some extent by what grows in the soil. The microorganisms in the soil can tie it up, but the more important organisms are going to be the plants that grow there. So perennials like a native pasture or woodland, they have pretty high water use. They don't take up much nitrogen. They have dense rooting and generally low profitability in our current economic system. So it's one way to approach it, and this is what CRP did, the Conservation Reserve Program, where you set aside land, it was highly erodible typically, and put it into a perennial a mixture that typically turned into brome grass or something like that over time, but it did protect the soil, and it actually also helped protect groundwater. An alternative to that is use working lands. This is pretty common in the southeastern part of our state or throughout the whole area of Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, the driftless region, where it's strip cropped with an annual crop and a perennial crop, in this case alfalfa. And that was mainly for erosion control. These perennials have high water use, like the natives, high nitrate uptake capacity, unlike the natives, because alfalfa can absorb 200 to 400 pounds per acre per year. A deep rooting habit, not so much dense, but a deep rooting capacity and high profitability. And in fact, even without government programs, a person who knows how to raise alfalfa can make more money per acre doing that than growing corn. This year might be an exception with the high prices. Let's see here. So I'm going to talk about the Boy Scout who comes in and helps clean it up, and that is our perennial crops that we can actually use to keep the place cleaner. Now, I know we've just eaten lunch, and I know it won't be easy to pay attention. And some of you can relate to some of the people in here, or maybe only one of the people in here, but this is how you're going to feel, and if you really have to take a little rest, that's okay. I understand it. But we're going to take a peek underground. Now, this isn't a new idea. The fact that natives from our region, and as you go further west, it's even more important, have very deep root systems. These are one-foot intervals. These are typical prairie plants. I won't go through all the species. It's sort of irrelevant. And this is alfalfa over here at the same scale. Cottrell in 1902 talked about alfalfa roots, and they said they extend 15 to 30 feet and more in depth in fairly good soil. What does that mean, fairly good soil? I know a lot of you think about the regolith, the rocks, but what about the soil? What's fairly good soil? Sorry? Okay, a sandy loam, that's a pretty good soil, yeah, right? A lot of our lush soils are great. Clay loams are pretty good because they're well structured. Basically, any soil that doesn't have a tight BT horizon or a lot of rock or is too droughty or is just at the interface with, let's say, sandstone or limestone, and is deep enough to hold the water, is a fairly good soil. So alfalfa in 1902 could extend that far, providing the soil's that deep, right? Weaver, this was from Nebraska, he studied a 2-year-old alfalfa field. And what I mean, Weaver took undergraduates out and they dug the pit and they went down and found the roots. While many tap roots ended at depths of 7 to 10 feet after 2 years, others extended to the water table depth at 12 feet. So this was known, this has been known for a while that they're deeply rooted. Here's a little bit more of Weaver's work. His colleague Jean looked at roots of alfalfa. This is 1-year-old alfalfa and this is 2-year-old alfalfa. Each horizontal line is a foot. And what we typically think of in alfalfa is it'll grow 4 to 6 feet per season, per growing season, for as long as you have it in. Corn's equal to that. How many growing seasons do we have corn in the ground? Uno, yep. So it can grow 4 to 6 feet. That's great. Soybean can grow 4 to 6 feet, and it routinely grows, full-season soybeans routinely grow to 6 feet, but they have a very small root system, but not very well ramified. Alfalfa does that every year, as long as the soil allows it. And that has real important impacts. The early research in the 50s looked at, and actually in the early part of the last century, was interested in how plants can acquire nutrients from the soil. How big is their root system? Can they get down to the phosphorus that the prairie plants didn't pull up and enrich the topsoil with? And later with sub-irrigation along the Platte River, for example. This is work on radioactive phosphorus that was applied at the surface or at different depths down to 8 feet on 2-year-old alfalfa. And you can see that the alfalfa was taking up about 8% of its phosphorus from that 8-foot depth by the end of the season. So that's really, that shows that the roots aren't just there, they're actually active. And phosphorus, you know, doesn't move very far in the soil. So the roots have to go to it, or the mycorrhizae have to get to that. So we know that the roots are active, they're present deep in the soil. Recently, we've been more interested in nitrate. This is from the 70s. You know, some of you can remember the 70s. This is depth in meters down to 6. And this is nitrate in parts per million, and this is percent water in the soil, and for 3 different years after establishing alfalfa. And what Mathers and colleagues found in Colorado is that they had great reductions. They, first of all, they primed the soil with 3 very heavy applications of manure, and then they grew alfalfa to see how well it could clean it up. And they said that it removed down to about 3 meters, 9 feet, 10 feet, most of the nitrate in the soil after 3 years. That's pretty good. Semi-arid, nitrate's not moving very fast, not a lot of driving force behind it. And it not only took up the nitrate, but look what it did to the water. It sucked it way down. So at the lower part of that profile where it's not being recharged every year, it also reduced the thing that moves the nitrate, which is the water. So alfalfa and other deep-rooted perennials can take up the nitrate at depth, far below the depth of our annual crops, and also reduce the water flux. This is from Robbins and Carter. They worked in Idaho. This is cumulative nitrate leached below 6 feet or plus in kilograms per hectare. So it starts with 0, goes up to 140. Alfalfa was much lower than a bean crop. You can imagine beans are only going to grow an active root zone about that deep, whereas alfalfa is quite a bit further. And when they rotated out of alfalfa the beans, they got a lot more nitrate loss. So that's been 40 years ago. How does this work exactly? Well, one of our problems in the Midwest is that we've converted most of our land, our managed agricultural land, to 2 crops, corn and soybean. They're row crops. They're really easy to grow because you can use the same suite of implements. So farmers really like that. In fact, now you can use the same herbicide, which is probably not good in the long run. But it makes life a lot simpler. But look when they grow. This is corn, this orange. This is photosynthesis, so you think of that as growth. Okay, so the orange pattern here is corn, and the red is soybean. That's pretty late in the year. That's early June. Corn's got to be this high before it's taking up anything substantial from the soil. What's alfalfa done in the meantime? Well, we've already taken a harvest of 1.5 to 2 tons of dry matter off the alfalfa field. So here's tile drainage in at Waseca. This is the average over many years of work. Giles Randall has provided this. You can see that tile drainage losses, tile drains are typically 3 to 4 feet deep. Does everybody know what tile drains are? They're subsurface tiles that help you farm so that you can get in on the soil with traffic and plant your crop in a timely way. You can get in the fall when soils get wet again and you can harvest the crop. We've been installing these since the mid-1800s. This is the main drainage season, this April-May area, and then it's still pretty important in June. Well, alfalfa's produced a whole lot of dry matter during that time, and you've taken that off. It's also used water. So it's taking the nitrate out of that soil solution, putting it into protein that you're going to feed to animals, and used a lot of that water and reduces drainage. What happens in the fall? Both of these annuals, they're done. Their whole job is to produce seed, right? Annuals reproduce by seed. So they're done. They're not using any water. They're not taking up any nitrate. We don't have a practice of using cover crops or intercrops. So anything that happens in the fall, and you know, last fall we had a lot of rain, and this fall we've had quite a bit, that'll move nitrate. It'll also stimulate mineralization of nitrate. So we've got a perennial out here that extends the growing season another month and a half. So it's helping on both ends of the season. And that's one of the reasons we have a lot of problems with nitrate in the Mississippi River. We have tile drains that shorten the hydrologic pathways, take water from the field and deliver it to ditches with whatever's entrained in that water. And because of our cropping system, which is corn and beans, there's nothing there to keep the nitrates low. So that's dumping in the upper part of the Mississippi River basin in the spring primarily, and adding this huge load of nitrate to the river. Now, less soil water is really important because it means lower flux, and it also means that with a rainfall event or an irrigation, you have more storage capacity. So the nitrate, which moves with the water, is more likely to stay there if you have less water to begin with. So you get a rain event, not 10 inches like we had a little while ago, but a reasonable rain event, and it's not going to move very far because you've got storage capacity. And here's an example from Manitoba. The lower line is alfalfa in both cases. These are two different depths of the soil, 2 to 3 feet and 3 to 5 feet. The alfalfa is the lowest one, so you've got a lot less soil water under alfalfa in that situation than you do in fallow with no crop. That's the top line with round dark dots. And the two middle ones are annual cropping systems from up there, which include peas and wheat and so on. So if you take perennials out of the system, you reduce the flux of nitrate through the soil. Now, these gifts aren't free, and we've got to manage them right. This is the same work by Martin Entz and his colleagues. Each of these curves shows you a different year. This is soil profile depth down to 10 feet, nitrate in parts per million in the soil. This is the first year, the second year, the third year, the fourth year, the fifth year. That was good. Oops, 4 years. And then the fifth year, this one, there's an increase in nitrate. Why is that? Did it just peter out and say, I have enough? Why, after you have a nice perennial like alfalfa that's programmed to live, right? It's a perennial. It's not an annual. Why would you get an increase in nitrate after 4 years in this case? Well, actually, not every plant's the same in this stand. In fact, most plants are different. It's almost a truism that every plant, just like we, in the field is different. And we should have a different longevity, and so do they. It's not necessarily programmed, but they're subjected to different stresses. Gophers, for example, winter stress, and so on. And so you get some stand decline, and those plants decompose, and the other plants are too few to take that up. So in this case, we don't just plant all the fields to alfalfa and then expect the nitrate to go away. You've actually got to rotate it. Well, is this ready to help us? Here's Minnesota and the high sensitivity regions for groundwater contamination by nitrate. This is right in here. And that's about where alfalfa's grown. That's pretty good. That would be nice if that worked out. Maybe we could spread alfalfa in a few other places. Well, corn doesn't fit quite as well. Corn grain's down in here, and we don't have groundwater issues so much down in there. We have a lot of surface water issues. But I think we're working at the wrong scale when we look at maps like this. This just implies that you can grow the crop in a certain area. But you all know that it's location, 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 right? Water gets through the soil, gets through rock, in only certain places. It doesn't flow like piston flow, typically, okay, unless you've got a really nice powder sand. So if we grow everything to alfalfa or everything to a perennial grass mixture, we're going to have nitrate losses that are very low, regardless of the tile drainage. This is tile-drained land at Lamberton. Annual average tile drainage is 6 inches. 15 centimeters. 6 inches is normal. We had a 20-inch year one year. Did that make nitrate go up? No, because there wasn't any nitrate in the water. Had a lot of drainage, but these guys cleaned it out. Here's a corn-soybean or a corn-corn rotation, 88, 89, pretty dry years for those of you old enough to remember. And then regular years, pretty wet year, regular years here. Look at the number of pounds of nitrate, nitrogen that are leaving the tile in well-managed corn and soybean. Right? We're losing nitrate under soybeans too. That nitrogen isn't coming necessarily from fertilizer. We have very rich soils. We have very high organic matter prairie soils, and we're still living off that legacy, and that's still causing us a bit of a problem. Well, here's what I'm going to say about this, is it doesn't just take a crop, you can graze it. We happen to live also at a place that isn't too wet. If you lived in the East Coast in Pennsylvania, New York, probably couldn't show this same slide because there's a lot more excess water in that humid region. We're in a dry subhumid region, so we can graze sheep or cattle, and we have very low concentrations in the water. This is birdsfoot trefoil, higher than under a trefoil reed canary grass mix, a grass legume mix. And mowed, of course, you're not getting the urine and the feces redeposited. But when you look at the total loss, 1.5 pounds per acre, that's not very much nitrogen. A farmer cannot manage 1.5 pounds of nitrogen, right? You can't adjust a fertilizer spreader that closely. So grazing seems to be pretty good, and it only exceeded the public drinking water limit in the spring. This is the 90th day of the year in both cases, both years. Most of the time, nitrate was very low. The other neat thing about grazing is that you've added a lot of dissolved organic carbon. You heard about redox earlier. Dissolved organic carbon helps that quite a bit because the organisms like to break it down and use up oxygen. Well, a good friend of mine, Brian Brown from Stevens Point, conducted this work with us. He put in 100 mini piezometers in a 10-acre field. That's what each red dot is showing you, the location of those mini piezometers. And he could suck out the water, and using ebullition, or bubbling, he basically made it boil with a pressure differential. He sucked it out through a small tube and went into a larger glass opening, and that has the gases come out so he can collect those. This was dissolved organic carbon in the water that he found. Under a cornfield, it's much lower than under pasture. Well, that doesn't sound very good if it got into the creek, right? Got a lot of BOD. But dissolved oxygen went just the opposite way, as you'd expect. Denitrification, of course, followed that. With higher DOC, lower oxygen, there's much higher denitrification potential. And dissolved organic N in the soil, in the water, also went down. So we actually find that in pasture situations here and in Europe, that there can be a lot more denitrification. Typically goes all the way to N2 gas. But let's talk about site-specific things for a while. We can't apply this to a county, we can't apply it to a farm, and we can almost barely apply it to a whole field. And this is the reason, because soil is dry, is really the matrix that all this has to go through. We can crop uniformly, we can put in one genotype across a whole field of corn, let's say, and we'll still have different leaching through most fields that we have. So this is the Holland wellhead protection area near Pipestone, just north of Pipestone. There's the wells. And we were asked a few years ago to evaluate what they could do to reduce the nitrate, which was building up in their public wells. They serve, at that time, about 13,000 people, a million gallons a day. So we used gleams, validated with some data from Lamberton. And when we mapped the whole wellhead, you could see that alfalfa kept the nitrate losses very low. A soybean corn rotation with minimal or with a low N rate applied, you can start to see that there are some leakier parts through the wellhead, right? If you go to just corn, you have to increase the rate. This is lower than the rate we'd recommend now. And you're starting to see more areas that are leaking more nitrate, four times more in this case. And then if you increase that rate, you start to get a lot of higher losses. But they're site-specific. So what do we tell the guys who run that wellhead protection area? Plant it all to alfalfa? I don't think so. We could tell them that. But here's a blow-up of just the 10-year time of travel area. Here are the wells again. And this is now done on a soil, essentially you could think of this as soil type basis. So the red areas are where the losses are 15 to 20 pounds of leached N per acre per year. And that's where we said, if you want to get the most from your money, if you've got to pay a farmer to change his or her practices, focus on those areas, wherever they are. What they had done just a couple years before is take this quarter section and convert it to switchgrass with Pheasants Forever. They helped support that. I think that's a great idea. And it would have been even greater had it been a leaky soil. It would have made a difference. Its proximity doesn't always matter. Here, this is really close. Would have helped to convert those, but they would have gotten a whole lot more bang for their buck here or even here, because this flows back toward the wells. Or even up in here, would have taken longer. So it does matter where it is, and you can use modeling to do some of that. But all alfalfa isn't the same. Turns out that some colleagues of mine discovered some sort of measly-looking alfalfa in the greenhouse one year. They couldn't figure out what was going on with it, so they took it out of the pots, and there weren't any nodules on it. Or the nodules that were there, these are on the roots, were white. And they said, well, what's going on with this? And so legumes have a symbiotic relationship with bacteria called cyanorhizobium, in this case, that fix nitrogen from the atmosphere. And these measly-looking alfalfa plants couldn't do it. So they actually worked with it. They thought, instead of throwing it out, they're going to keep this. Maybe there's some reason to have this non-fixing type of alfalfa called ineffective. Well, a few years later, we came along, and we used it in a field where we sub-irrigated the crop with N15-labeled nitrate, stable isotope of nitrogen, and we buried soaker hoses in the ground and fed that to the crop. And we fed it to regular, ineffective agate alfalfa and agate alfalfa. And we this is ineffective for these two. Sorry, this is control and with the nitrate solution. And then here are the two treatments for the nitrogen-fixing entries. Basically, the red in this is other nitrogen, probably from the soil, maybe from internal recycling. The orange is subsoil nitrate that we fed it, and we know where that isotope came from. And the green is nitrogen fixation. So alfalfa can fix its own N, but it isn't an obligate fixer. It'll fix what it needs in addition to what it can get from the environment. We thought that was pretty cool, except then we noticed this. There's a whole lot more uptake in the non-fixing alfalfa than in the fixing alfalfa. Is that a situation of eating too much and then not really having room for dessert? Well, we worked with Bruce Montgomery of MDA and Canadian Pacific Rail, to deal with this situation. They had an unfortunate accident in the middle of winter, train derailment, and it dumped urea and also shot some anhydrous ammonia into the soil. And they spent 7 years trying a variety of things to clean it up. And finally, Bruce said, well, why don't we give alfalfa a shot up there? And they helped support that. So we planted the site to alfalfa. And we had not regular nitrogen-fixing alfalfa over most of the site, but we planted some plots, this is just a test strip, to that non-N-fixing type. And you can see it's yellow looking, right? Most of it. Not everything. There's some nice stuff right there where there's probably a lot of nitrogen still available to the crop. But around Joanne Lamb here, she's the one that actually worked on making this a more viable cultivar, it's pretty yellow. So it can signal when the site is cleaned up. It's really hard to produce this seed, so don't ask me for any. You'll have to ask Joanne. But the point is that we have something that is alfalfa, that grows like alfalfa if there's plenty of nitrogen, and it'll also tell you when you've got a remediation site that's ready to go. But we found that the fixing and non-fixing types absorb the same amount of nitrate. So unlike our previous test, they didn't behave differently. Well, we weren't ready to give that up, so we went to an abandoned barnyard over in Wisconsin. We don't have any in this state. And this one was one that was managed really quite well. These guys had their heifers on this area, and they rotate them. They'd move the feeding stations around. They're really good managers, but they're on a sandy loam soil, grading to loamy sand. And you can see the variability out there. This is just a black and white aerial from TerraServer back then, but it's quite variable. We set out big plots, 200 by 100 feet, and you can see the variation in mineralizable N. Guess where the feeding locations were? These are big animals, and they come around and they eat, and they don't bother to go over to the corner to go to the bathroom. So they ended up with nice big patches of manure. Those aren't the ones you step in. That's a big patch of manure. And this is a quick result from the N uptake that we harvested with agate and non-fixing agate. And then we also added a Saranac version of that. And you can see this is soil plus manure. That's the lower part of each bar. And that declines over time because the stand actually is a very droughty site, so it didn't do as well as it could. But we are removing 350 pounds of N the first year. Not all of it came from the soil. Some came from fixation. That's the green bar on top of the fixing ones. But in this case, this was such a poor site. There was so little N being made available in most places of the field that the ineffective was a really bad choice. It got weedy really quickly. Farmers weren't very happy. We were happy because we found out that there are limits. But this shows that with a fixing type, you can actually remove quite a bit of nitrogen, even though it's fixing all along. However, what kind of soil type? What was the soil texture? Sandy loam, grading to loamy sand, right? So did we protect groundwater? Well, I wish I could say we protected groundwater. We didn't exactly have a lot of wet years either. These open symbols on the lower right are the control wells that were up gradient. They were at the upper part of the four plots. And groundwater flowed pretty much in line with the way we laid out the plots. And the dark symbols are the downgradient wells. So they're all higher in nitrate. So we weren't able to prevent nitrate from escaping that site. And maybe the water wasn't flowing that much, and we actually just had a big bunch that went down there, and it contaminated it, and it stayed there for 3 years. But generally, this moves 30 to 300 feet a year, depending on how much goes through there, so it's unlikely. So in this case, a vegetative approach to remediation didn't work. We can't always clean up the mess we make, simply. Well, you know, when I talk with farmers or their advisors about growing more alfalfa, they first of all say, well, where's the market? Nobody wants to feed alfalfa anymore. They want to feed corn silage because it's a lot easier to deal with. And we've been losing 136,000 acres a year for 30 or 40 years in the U.S. Well, so market's a big deal. We don't have the equipment. Well, that's true. Don't have the equipment. So are there other ways we could approach this? Could we limit the land that needs to be converted and still capture the nitrate? You've heard about, maybe you've heard about, let's say, bioreactors and denitrification walls around tile drains. That's essentially focusing on the areas where the problem is occurring. This is using the grass waterway idea, only we're thinking about below ground. Can these strips of perennials in a regular annual field that has normal management, can they help solve the problem? So we've done this experiment for a little while at Waseca. These are plots that are 100 feet long and 75 feet wide because these are patterned tiles that go through the field every 75 feet. And so we have one type of perennial crop here. We have, of course, our annual control, another over there. It was really good to do work there because they're such great help. So the first experiment we did, the first four graphs here, each one of those a year, okay? So that's 4 years, that's 4 years, that's 4 years, all the same experiment. But turns out that the tiles weren't all at the same depth. That's what you get when you don't have perfect information and you have to make a decision. So we had tiles that were normal depth, that's only 3 feet, and that's 5 feet, right? 4 feet to about 5 feet. Those are pretty typical depths of tiles in our region. Those are 5 to 6 feet. That's deeper than we normally have. Well, it turns out we can learn something from that, because if you look at the nitrate concentration for the corn-soybean rotation, those are the yellow dots, those basically don't change. On an annual basis, flow-weighted averages, they're much higher than the perennial strips, which only take out 20% of the land in this case. We've got 75-foot spacings. These are 15-foot wide strips. And the green shows you that when we establish the crop, it's no different than an annual crop. But it's no worse. But then as the perennial gets established, you can see the nitrates are generally trending considerably lower. And when we look at the 2004-2005, the last 2 years of the first experiment, it was almost 15 parts per million coming out under corn and soybean, and 4 parts per million coming out under a perennial strip that didn't take the whole field. So we're really leveraging the capacity of those deep roots to strip out the nitrate before it gets in the tile. Farmers still don't like it because they don't want to farm over it, but it is an approach that might work. One of the good things about it is that regardless of the flow on a daily basis, the nitrates were low in the perennials and they were high, and this is unfortunate, it would be nice if they were low in the corn and soybean, but they're not. They're just considerably higher. You think, well, this might be trending down, but this variation here is probably also happening out here. It's just we didn't have enough data points. Well, how practical is this? Turns out that not all fields are tiled in a perfectly regular matter. And so this aerial shows you a lot of random tiles through the field. And what I did was find out which way they're farming. You can see the strips. And then I calculated which ones needed to be or could be with these grass waterways. And in this case, if we wanted to get a 10% reduction in this land area, this is 1.5 sections roughly, or 1 2/3, if it was a random tile, we want every random tile that we can to have with the perennial strip. But pattern tiles, we'd only need 2/10 of them, you know, that much of the area. That much of the tiles. If we wanted a 50% reduction, we need to have every tile covered. 50% is a big reduction. But we know that we can't do that with fertilizer rate or management alone, with an annual system. And why can't we do it with an annual system? Because of that, the fact that the water flow and the crop growth aren't happening at the same time. Well, how far can we push this? We decided what we do is add nitrate to irrigation water, drip irrigation in the first trial, which we did on small plots at Becker on a sandy loam, loamy sand. We found with 25 parts per million, nitrate coming in the top for the whole season, except in the fall when things are starting to shut down. Alfalfa, orchard grass, brome grass kept the nitrate to 1, 2, 3, 4 parts per million. And we're putting 25 parts per million on the top. Now, these root systems are typically only 3 to 4 feet deep because the soil gets very coarse, deeper, and they have a hard time penetrating. Well, 50 parts per million. Most of them were staying below 10 parts per million for the whole season. Soybean wasn't doing a very good job. Soybean was all over the map. Soybean can absorb a lot of nitrogen from the soil, but when it's moving through, it doesn't have the root length density or the water use to pull it out. Well, this gave us some hope, so we thought, well, we're going to try to figure out a way we can do phytoremediation. Oh, that's interesting. That was supposed to show you something. There it is. Okay, it does show you something. This is a greenhouse trial where a student did her honors thesis and she pushed water through at a constant rate through 1 meter long sand in which we grew plants. And she determined that the water had to be in the root zone of alfalfa for 30 hours in order for it to pull the nitrate down from 28 parts per million to 2. I mean, we had a low limit. We didn't want much nitrate escaping. So it needed to be in there for 30 hours in this system, whereas with orchard grass, it only needed to be in 12. Well, how fast does water move in most of our soils? Not very darn fast. This is sand. This is coarse sand. So it's quite likely that if we have a perennial there that's using water, needs nitrogen, it could actually reduce the nitrate content. And the idea here is that if we have shallow groundwater that's also used for irrigation, could be, and we got a public water well that needs clean water and nitrate's the issue, then the idea was, well, maybe we can put that well where the nitrate is and irrigate with it. But not just feed the crop. That's sort of an old idea. This is to feed the crop and also run a lot of clean water through the root zone. And it really seemed like a neat idea. And I still think it's a neat idea. Well, we worked with it for several years. And when we finally got out in the field under a real pivot on real soil, we found out that that real soil had a BT horizon that extended from about 9 inches roughly underground to something like 2 feet. We could not push water through that BT horizon. So we still had high nitrate concentrations in the soil solution, but we weren't moving water through there, and the alfalfa couldn't strip it out. So this is really not ready for prime time yet. I don't know. We might have a minute or two for questions. I'd be happy to answer them. Obviously, you don't do this work alone. This is only part of them. Jerry Wright, I noticed, was missing, even though he's not missing here. And so I wanted to thank all of the people who've helped on this research. Thanks very much for your attention. I didn't see anybody sleeping.
I think we have a little bit of time.
Okay, the question is that the original prairie grass, I think you're thinking of just one species, maybe a mixture. But if you try to reestablish a prairie, they don't do very well. And that is true. It's hard to establish a native mixture. We found in some work that there's too much nitrate available in most of our agricultural fields. So it's very hard to just take that and then plant these warm season, typically warm season crops, and have them compete against our weeds. They have a really hard time of that. So if you add carbon, and we found 8 tons of sawdust really works well, that really reduces the nitrogen. And the weeds can't compete, but these prairie species do just fine. I mean, they're also reduced, but they get a much better stand establishment. That's not the only issue. A lot of times people will plant these prairie mixtures with flowers and grass, but no legumes. And legumes like lead plant and purple prairie clover and things like that can fix nitrogen, do fix it if they've got the right rhizobia, and they can actually help feed those non-legumes. But to actually get them reestablished is not that easy, but it's quite nice when it happens. You gotta give it some time too. But it's multiple species. Most of our prairies weren't just one. Huh?
Would that be a 5-year program or a 10-year program?
Well, usually in 3 years you can feel like it's doing okay. If again you gotta get a lead on the weeds. Right. And there are several nurseries around that do sell. Hi. Well, you asked me one question, I might be able to answer, and another one I won't. I'm federal, and I work for the president. Obviously, the Farm Bill could be altered to provide some incentives or disincentives for certain practices. We have them in the current Farm Bill for other things. The educational thing is only part of it. If, let's say, somebody did modeling like Luke can do and so on, or Adam, on the wellhead and did the irrigation, and irrigation really exacerbates the losses. And it does it because you're keeping the soil too full of water. You irrigate to grow crops, not to store the next rainfall, and that's the problem. Then you get leaching. And it's not on every soil again. But you could go ahead and do that, but what's going to make them want to do that instead of something else? And, you know, the cost of treatment, well, they've already got that sunk pretty much in the reverse osmosis system and so on. Well, maybe it's not that big a deal. I don't know. I think, at least my role, I feel, is to let people know what some of the options are and what some of the limitations are, and then they have to decide within their own constraints what to do about that. Farmers have been listening to me about corn after alfalfa this year because nitrogen's pretty expensive. And when they found out they don't have to apply any nitrogen after alfalfa's taken out for 1 year, you mean I only have to put on starter? I say, yeah. How much you've been putting on? Well, I'd rather not say. then suddenly they're seeing dollar signs with that. And in this case, it would be dollar signs the other way because you'd have to promote a different cropping system or take the land out of production. And in some places, society's deciding that intensive ag production isn't compatible with cities, for example, and sensitive aquifers. I'm not recommending that necessarily, but thanks. I better give over to Carl. Thank you.